responded and threw out. It was a physical battle, but Josh Anderson bracing for contact. Nils Höglander expecting contact, pushes off, and they call that interference on Höglander. But still, Vancouver starts off this road trip getting a point, and I think the most important thing for Vancouver, A, of course, they get back Quinn Hughes, but also a monster night from JT Miller. Picks up 4 points, the ninth time in his career that he's done that. So you've got the top line going. You got your MVP for the season back in the lineup. It's unfortunate they couldn't pick up 2 points, but there are still some positives to come out of this game.
And JT Miller is our player of the game, brought to you by Waypoint Insurance. From business to home to auto to personal insurance, Waypoint has your back. Waypoint Insurance, together protecting what you love. Visit waypoint.ca. Once again, the final score, the Canadiens 5 and the Canucks 4 in overtime. For Randeep Janda, this is Brendan Batchelor. The Canucks Central postgame show starts right now.
This is the Canucks Central postgame show.
Newhook across the Vancouver line. Try to toe drag into the slot. Sasson broke it up. Hudson holds in down the left wing. Threw it up front. They score! Hughes passes left wing for JT Miller. Top of the circle, played it through to DeBrusk. He scores! Jake DeBrusk was wide open on the right wing. He scores his team-leading 17th of the season. And the Canucks tie it at 4 on the man advantage.
With instant reaction from the players and coaches.
Now for Hudson. High slot. Back to Suzuki with room. Takes a shot. He scores! Suzuki wins it for the Habs in overtime. Kevin Lankinen is complaining about something. And the Canucks bench is upset. Rightfully so.
Have your say on the official home of the Canucks. Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks blow another lead. Now lose 5-4 in overtime against the Montreal Canadiens. Had a 3-1 lead in this game. End up losing 5-4 in overtime. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Bick Nazar. And keep getting your thoughts in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650. Or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. We'll get to your reaction coming up in a little bit. And we'll get to Randeep Janda in the post-game review coming up in just a moment as well, Bick. But this was a game there for the taking. You have the two-goal lead, and the Canucks come and tie it up again in the third, end up on the PK, and next thing you know, you end up losing in overtime. And they pick up a point on the road, but that's been the story of the Canucks season, right? Blowing leads and not getting the 2 points in overtime.
Yeah, another point dropped, right? The opportunity was there with the lead going into the third period, and they are now going to be 13-0-6. When leading after two. We're talking about fine margins here, right? That's 6 points that are on the table that if you salt those away, okay, maybe don't go to every single one, but, man, they were so good at this last year, and this is what the best teams do when leading after two, and you go look at, like, who the best teams are in this stat here. It's the Oilers, it's the Devils, it's the Leafs, the Jets, the Hurricanes, Stars, Capitals, Avalanche, Wild, like, there's your top nine, and those are the teams that have been the best throughout the course of this season. Vancouver Canucks, again, 13-0-5. That's 5 points, or sorry, 6 points that you've let slip now.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like it's just letting it slip out of your hands, right? And, you know, I know the Höglander play late is controversial. Let's bring in Randeep Janda into the conversation. I know a lot of people are mad about that play, and he ends up in the penalty box. And I know there's some confusion from a lot of our texters, and I see on social media as well. He wasn't called for his physicality on Lane Hudson. He was called for interference on Josh Anderson. And I know fans are saying, Höglander was standing still, and Josh Anderson skates into him. Höglander can see Anderson back into him, and he kind of two-hand shoves him too from behind. If he doesn't shove him, maybe it's fine to just kind of collide, but it's, I don't know. He doesn't have a stick, and when you don't have your stick, you have to be extra careful when you're out there on the ice. But Randeep, how did you see that entire play unfold?
Yeah, I think both of those, you know, when you're a player without a stick, you have to be careful, but at the same time, you're – you're also in a, you're bracing for contact potentially yourself, and it's a bigger physical player in Josh Anderson. I didn't like the call at that juncture of the game. You know, there's a lot that went on in that game. There's a lot of off the puck stuff, and with 35 seconds left, I think that was a play that, sure, it's a borderline play at that point of the game. I don't like that call, and I thought the crowd factored in. Batch and I were talking about that at the beginning of the game. Montreal crowds, they are calling for a lot of penalties. Sometimes they're wanting phantom calls, and at some point, whether it's, you know, a subtle work on the officials throughout the evening, it works sometimes. And I thought that entire shift where Hoglander's chasing, he's trying to be physical without a stick, it seemed like the crowd work worked a little bit, and also I just don't like that call in the final 35 seconds of the game.
It's the fact that he's got no stick, though, and it's like, yeah, he makes no effort to, like, get on the right side of Anderson. Like, he's got one intent to go through Anderson.
He puts the officials in a position to do that, but,
yeah,
know,
like, at borderline, he puts himself in a really dumb position.
Yeah, yeah, and that's fair, right? That's fair. It's just, given the totality of what was called in the game, I just thought it was an interesting thing to do in the final 40 seconds, and it's a shame because the game ends on a power play, but, you know, you put yourself in those positions, you give the opportunity to the officials to make that call. I don't agree with the call, but there was a couple of moments on that play where you don't have a stick, there's more attention on you, but I'm not a fan of that call late.
But suddenly, like, a penalty kill that has been pretty good gives up two goals there in the third period, and obviously in overtime as well, different circumstances, 4-on-3, but nevertheless, like, your special teams in a spot contributes to blowing the lead.
Yeah, and I thought in the regulation portion early on that power play, they did a good job of keeping it along the wall. Forbert tied it up, wasted some time, killed the clock until the end of regulation, but, you know, overtime starts, and what do we see? We see the ability of Montreal. They're able to set up, and there were power plays for Montreal in this game where I thought Pugh Suter and, of course, Teddy Bluger did a good job with a power play where you've got three skaters. There's a lot more room, and with Suzuki, like, he's got a full walk into it. He can, you know, add some torque to his shot. Forbert can't get in the shooting lane, and that's it. But Montreal on a couple of those goals tonight, guys, did a good job of getting traffic in front of Lankinen. Doc does it there. Earlier on in the game, we saw the goal where there were a couple of players. Armia was in front of the net on the Gouley goal. They had a double screen on that one as well. So, you know, they did their job. And unfortunately for Vancouver on the PK, just need to kill a few more seconds, and maybe you've got a chance to get in this game and win in an OT. And unfortunately, you drop that extra point.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? It's about the fact that the Canucks now have 6 OTL losses after having a lead in the third period.
Yeah,
that's 6 lost points, right? Like, it's 1 or 2, sure, but that's 6, and we're not even halfway through the season.
And there's another stat to add to that as well, guys. It's 12, that's their 12th blown lead loss of the season. The league worst, if I'm not mistaken, is 13. So Vancouver, anytime you are talking about, you know, 12 blown lead losses, that, you know, this is not the identity of the team going back to last year. Last year, they could manage games. They could, you know, if push came to shove, you had a little bit more resiliency in game. You were able to reset in game. And unfortunately, over the last little bit of a stretch here, they haven't been able to do that. They haven't had the composure. And we can, you know, look at it two sides. Of course, you get the point, which is fine. You get that goal to get back in the third period, but you shouldn't be losing in the third period when you have, a game where you're leading. So I look at, you know, of course, it's not a trend you want, because teams that have success, teams that make it far in the playoffs, they're able to reset. They're able to recalibrate in game. And Vancouver over the last little bit hasn't shown that.
So where does it stem for you with these blown leads? Is this about just overall aggressiveness? Is it just about that they have an inability to move the puck? Like, what is the defining trend through these here that stands out to you?
Well, there was one play when the game was 3-1, Lekkerimäki scores, and there's one play where the puck is thrown into the Montreal zone and there's no forward because they're changing. So Carson Soucy kind of jumps up and he leads the forecheck. Here's the thing. Coming back the other way, nobody covers for him, so it results in a 2-on-1 for Joel Armia and his line mate. And guys, what happens after that is it's just ozone time after ozone time after ozone time. So when you're making a decision like that, is there somebody on the ice, A, to cover for you if you move your way up the ice, and B, you know, that's also on his teammates to recognize, hey, our defenseman is up there. We gotta, you know, make sure that we get back and he's going to pressure the puck. I got to make sure that I take his position until he gets back. That doesn't happen, and really welcomed a lot of ozone time for Montreal. They were in the zone for about another 90 seconds. Eventually, Caden Gooley scores. I think it's just, you know, when we talk about game management, are you making the right decision at the right time? You know, Soucy does that there. He doesn't have the support. You can blame the defenseman for being too aggressive there, but you can blame his teammates for not supporting him. But even later on in the game, guys, there was another opportunity, and it's Carson Soucy yet again going up, you know, the left-hand side, and he steps up into the neutral zone, and that leads to another transition attack. So it's, are you making the right decisions at the right time? Are you being aggressive at the right time? And at that point, it's a 4-4 game. It's a tie game. Kevin Lankinen bails him out with a big save. But to me, it's about, are you being aggressive at the right time? And I think over the last couple of games, whether it was, you know, winning a puck battle against Nashville that led to the goal against, and that was really the deciding goal, going back to that Calgary game of, you know, just not having that cohesion defensively or not making the right decision at the right time. These are, it might happen once or twice in a game, but those moments are costing Vancouver.
Yeah, and it's not like the Canucks haven't lost leads when Pedersen's been on the team too, but we know for all the talk of Pedersen's struggles this year, and we all know he can be better and needs to be better, but one area of his game where he hasn't had a lot of issues has been defensively. He's been good defensively, and not having a player like him to close games down, I think having him around probably would have helped you out a little bit in the third here.
For sure it would have, guys. And I think, you know, I want to just pull up the stats here in the second line. But, you know, when your second line is getting caved in like the Vancouver Canucks were over 40 minutes, they didn't have a single shot attempt. So the Suter, Garland, DeBrusque line, while they're together, it was 13 zip for Montreal. You make some changes a little bit later on. But, you know, when Pedersen's in the zone, he's got a good active stick. He's able to break up plays. He's able to launch counterattacks. And I thought today, you know, we've talked often about Pugh Suter and his inability over the last five or six games to pick up points. But I thought today defensively as well, that line got caved in a fair bit. They didn't have a forecheck. We saw a bit of a switch later on with Phil DiGiuseppe going in for Jake DeBrusque on the 5-on-5 shifts. But yeah, that 1-2 punch wasn't there. And that's unfortunate because JT Miller was doing everything tonight, guys. He was, you know, so electric. He was aggressive. He was assertive. But you needed that second punch. You needed somebody to eat those tough minutes and win those, at the very least, break even. And unfortunately for Vancouver, you know, not having Pedersen showed tonight because that Suter line got caved in.
JT Miller, though, carries the mail. 4 points for JT amidst all the speculation and drama that's going on. He was central to everything in the offensive zone.
Yeah, I thought there was a couple of things. And early on in that game where you saw Gooley step up on Lekkomäki and he also hit Pugh Suter, there's one sequence where JT's aggressive on the forecheck and maybe hits Lane Hutson a half a second late, but he wanted to kind of push back a little bit after Montreal started off very physical. Struble had a hit too. And then that just kind of created the sequence of, all right, playing with confidence and, you know, different types of goals. I love the way that he also ran the power play on that Jake DeBrusque goal where he just froze the Montreal PK. They thought he was going to shoot, but just that quick little change to set up the man. And even Armia, as you can see him looking at JT and starting to kind of creep to the middle of the ice, expecting a rebound to come through. I thought that was a very assertive, physical, and the word that comes to mind for JT tonight was hunger, right? He was a hungry player tonight. I think physically, I think the fact that he wanted the puck on his stick and he was chasing down players, he was being physical throughout the night. That's the JT Miller that, you know, even in pregame stat, we were talking about it. It was like, all right, you just need a consistent effort from that first line. And JT brought it tonight, no doubt.
He did. And, you know, the other positive was seeing Jonathan Lekkomäki have the success that he had the goal, had the assist. And we'll see if this is something he can build on. But I thought by far the most dangerous he's looked in the NHL so far in his young career.
Yeah, and we're going to focus on the goal because that's his shot, right? That's what he's known for. That's what he does. But even on that first goal, the second goal, the Miller second goal, his ability to drive to middle of the net, and he fans on the shot. But, you know, that's a confidence where, remember, he got his bell rung by Caden Gooley early in this game, comes back in the second period, and is taking the puck through the middle of the ice. A lot of young players maybe shy away from that moment. Not this guy saying, hey, that's fine. This is the NHL. I got to keep my head up. I got to make sure I got to know who's on the ice. But I like the fact that he drove the net. He creates that opportunity, gets the primary assist there. And also, you know, you see that shot that he can just pick corners with. There was a couple other moments. Maybe he had some half chances throughout the game. That's a play, probably a game where you have some adrenaline, of course, coming back to the NHL. Now, here's the key. Can you keep it going, right? If you're getting an opportunity to play in the top six, if you're getting an opportunity to play with JT Miller, you're going to get your looks. Just take them confidently, and I love the way he played tonight. I thought offensively it was strong, but you got to keep this up. Also, shout out to JT on that Lekkomäki goal as well. He gets a secondary assist, but the ability to drop deep there, help his defenseman out, make that pass to Brock Besser. You know, when we talk about how can centermen and forwards help out their D-men and moving the puck out, that's a classic example right there.
Randy, great stuff as always, man. Appreciate your time, and hopefully we talk about a Canucks win coming up on Wednesday.
Yeah, we're on Ovi watch next time around. We got Ovechkin and the Washington Capitals.
Yeah, he might get the record this year still after missing all those games. It's unreal what he's been able to do. Get 19 goals on the season.
Yeah, he's got luck on his side too, guys. You see the one on Saturday night off the faceoff, just bounces onto his stick. Like, yeah. It's hey, when you're good, you're lucky too, right?
Yeah, you got to be good to be lucky sometimes,
yep.
Right? But that's how it goes. Great stuff as always, man. Appreciate your time.
All right, boys. Take care.
That is the game review brought to you by BC Honda Dealers. Love a good save, then you'll love the all-new all-electric Honda Prologue EV. Score up to $8,000 in combined rebates. Visit bchonda.ca. Bick, before we have a lot more analysis coming up, but you know, a lot of reaction on the phone boards and the text inbox. But before we go to the phone boards, what are the people saying on the Dunbar Lumber text inbox 650-650?
Obviously, a lot of conversation about the end of regulation decision with the Hoglander penalty. Kurt in the North Shore, different opinion on it. Why is Hoglander on the ice in the final minutes? You can hang that one on the coach. We'll see if that one has an explanation from Rick Tockett. Java in Kelowna, can the NHL give a trophy for the best goalie on a bad team? Because Lankinen deserves better. And JB, some bad luck. JT, great game. Like Randeep said, some positives. How am I the positive one? This is weird, guys. It's coming in from JB in the inbox here, 650-650.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, again, like you did a lot of good things, but gave it away, you know? And you know, I don't think we have to. I think it's one of those things on the Hoglander call. You're probably not going to change your mind if you feel the way you do. You
I
know?
Just, but look, I think the broadcast, like the initial angle, did a poor job. And I think it was Thomas Hickey trying to say, like, hey, they actually just showed the replay in the building. And I don't think we got a good replay. I tweeted out a clip. I don't know. It seems pretty clear as day to me that that's interference.
Yeah, so if you look at the clip from, and I think it's the one that you posted as well. If you watch that clip, Anderson comes around and Hoglander actually steps into his path. So the whole idea of Hoglander being entitled to his ground, you are. But you can see as soon as Anderson turns, Hoglander steps into his path and initiates a shove into him. He doesn't have the puck at that moment. It's an interference call. You can call it borderline soft, but when you don't have a stick and you step into a player's path like he did, and it's very slight, but it's enough, right?
The one thing just to give it credence, if you think it's soft, like, I guess like Anderson does go into the corner and like maybe touches the puck. I can't tell from the broadcast angle, but like the puck's nowhere near Josh Anderson. It's with Lane Hutson in the corner, and Anderson's not quite to the hash marks, but coming up the wall, and Hoglander's really got one intent, just put his fists in his a shove right through the middle of the chest of Anderson.
If that was a Canucks, we would be screaming
be
for
furious.
A call, right? And if they got it, you would be happy they got it. And it's one of those things where, again, you call it somewhat soft, but don't give the official a chance. And somebody texted in and said, he's exhausted. Sure, you're exhausted. It's still a penalty, right? It ends up being an interference call.
The refs aren't sitting there and be like, oh, he's been out there for 53 seconds. We can let a bunch of things slide.
To the point, though, that why was Hoglander out there? Now, you can say the coach is showing us some confidence in a close game. He had a good game. I thought Hoglander played really well tonight. Like,
yeah.
I don't want to make this into like, oh, Nils Hoglander deserves to be in the doghouse. It was just a bad penalty, I thought. Not a good spot to put yourself in, but I thought he had a terrific game tonight. He had an assist. I thought he forechecked really well. He had a couple of chances. He's looked a lot more dangerous recently. It's too bad that this ended up happening for the kid.
Nils Hoglander tonight ends up playing 12:01 tonight. So again, maybe it's a scenario. He crests that 12-minute mark again, two games in a row. Maybe it's a scenario. Rick Tockett liked his game, and there were appealing elements to his work tonight. Again, 1 minute left. Like, there were a couple of minutes, like Max Sack Sasson got a shift with about 4 minutes left, and that was the Brendan Gallagher backdoor play that nearly went in. Like, these are the things that we've talked about here recently. Like, if you're going to critique Rick Tocchet, and I think some people are annoyed by, like, the low event nature that has come forward here recently, for me, like, deployment is something I'm keeping an eye on. We've talked about Dakota Joshua. Why is he out there late if he's still working his way back into the season? But, like, moments like this, like, again, does Nils Höglander have to be out there with a minute to go, 90 seconds to go? Those to me are valid questions.
Yeah, I don't necessarily disagree with you about that at all. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. We'll get to more of your reaction coming up in a bit. Let's go to the phone boards and take a call before we hit the break as well. 604-280-0650, your toll-free 1-888-275-0650. Let's go to Andrew in Clarenville, Newfoundland. Thanks for calling in, buddy. What are your thoughts here on a tough Canucks loss in Montreal?
Good evening, boys. Last time I called in, I was in downtown Vancouver on the patio. I had the hat trick of Homo brags.
Right, right.
Oh, yeah.
Love it.
Unfortunately, I have nothing to brag about tonight. Living on the East Coast, I have a lot of Montreal Canadiens fans that are friends. I worked with a guy on Yellowknife. He was a Montreal Canadiens fan. He's texting me, "Allez, Montreal." It's a cruddy night. But to be honest, you know, I think we're lucky to have gotten a point tonight. I don't think we played very well. Apart from JT Miller and his first line, we're outplayed a lot. And it even goes back to last year where, I mean, in that Edmonton series, we were outplayed so many times and we managed to come back with the talent we had, but that only gets you so far. We're outshot a lot tonight. Montreal had a lot of great chances, a lot of tips in front that could have went in. Lankinen made a bunch of crazy saves. You know, it's kind of frustrating to watch us get outplayed like this consistently. A lot of time in our zone, not a lot of time in their zone. Miller really put the team on his back tonight. And I'm going to end with this. To the people that are saying we have to trade Miller or Pettersson, this is what the team looks like when we only have one line. We didn't have much besides the Miller line tonight. You know, obviously, if we trade one of them, we would get somebody back. But listen, we're not getting McKinnon. We're not getting McDavid. We're not getting Matthews. Right? We're going to suffer. I think we lose those trades 99 times out of 100. We need to have our two lines. We need Pettersson back. And yeah, we got to get going. Thanks, boys.
Hey, listen, great stuff as always, man. Called in humble bragging, but also called in when the times are in tough. See, that's true.
Shows up at all the times.
He's got
right?
character, man. That's a guy that has character. Appreciate Andrew calling in.
What's
from
the line?
Clarenville, Newfoundland.
Can't have me at my high if you can't have me at my low or something like that.
Yes, I may have heard that once or twice before, but that's a different conversation for a different day. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll free, 1-888-275-0650. We'll get to more of your reaction. We'll hear from the head coach and a lot more after a 5-4 overtime loss in Montreal for the Canucks on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Miss any part of Halford and Brough in the morning? Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast and don't miss an episode. This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Right boards for Hudson at the faceoff dot. Feeds top of the point for Caulfield. Watched by Bluger. Drops to Nick Suzuki. Now for Hudson. High slot. Back to Suzuki with room. Takes a shot. He scores! Suzuki wins it for the Habs in overtime. Kevin Lankinen is complaining about something. And the Canucks bench is upset. Rightfully so after the late call against Höglander, but we'll see if the game is over yet or not.
And the Montreal Canadiens are celebrating.
Habs win it 5-4 over the Canucks in Montreal. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. Satyar Shah. It's Satyar Shah with Biknazar. Keep getting your thoughts into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. And before we get to some reaction here, I mean, it's one of those games where there was so much to talk about, and had the Canucks held on to the 3-1 lead they had and the third period lead they had, there'll be a different discussion tonight about John Lekkomäki getting his shot with the Canucks yet again and looking dangerous all
what
night.
What a pull on that one.
Great goal. Gets a nice assist as well after driving towards the net, and JT Miller cashing in on the rebound. And JT Miller, 4-point performance tonight, and easily the best game we've seen him play so far this season. Engaged, on top of things. He started his first shift off by throwing a hit on the forecheck, and you could see the physical engagement was there, and it seemed like he was emotionally as part of the game as well. And you can talk about Kevin Lankinen, who, you know, I mean, a couple of the goals we might be able to talk about, but at one point, you know, he made a couple of huge saves as well, but we'll talk about Lankinen too. But had, you know, the Canucks won this game, we're talking about a great Lankinen performance and holding it down when the score was 3-2, when he made two big saves, one on Suzuki, one on Kirby Dach late in the second period, which held the Canucks lead heading into the third.
It's not so dissimilar to the Kraken game where they gave up the three goals, where a lot of good things in a rescue environment, right, just survive, gets undone by the blown lead. And yeah, there's a lot of contributing members tonight, right? Obviously, Lekkomäki, Lankinen, JT Miller's 4-point night suddenly falls by the wayside. Lekkomäki has 2 points. Quinn Hughes, in his return, plays 26-15. We've barely brought him up. He gets 2 assists. Just ho-hum after a couple of days off. He has another fantastic game. Like, there was a lot. Like, Tyler Myers, I thought, had a pretty decent game. Hits the post there in the third period. But all that is undone by blown lead and losing in overtime, the trend that we've seen throughout this season.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, Kirk and Kukulam says similar things. Guys, another loss. Some positives, though. JT, that's why he makes all that dough. Thanks for all those loser points. Keep the Canucks close in the standings, Kirk and Kukulam. So there are some positives, but at the same time, blowing those leads. And the Canucks, when they're tied with teams or when they have a one goal lead, like, they don't play very well. You know, we've seen this is a reason why they're losing all these leads, right? And you know, the coach last year spoke so much about meeting pressure with pressure, and that was a mantra for this team. They're certainly not doing that very well. They don't make plays with the puck. You even saw, you know, when that penalty happened to Hoglander, they were running around in their own zone. You talked about a couple shifts before that. They were running around in their own zone, and it almost seemed like if Montreal was going to get a chance, they were going to score. Like, you didn't feel very safe with the Canucks out there the final couple minutes of the game.
No, not at all. And you know, like, there's that backdoor tap in for Gallagher, which, you know, very well could have ended this much earlier. So the Canucks, in a way, you know, fortunate to get the point because there were some high dangers. And what's also interesting too is, like, after 20 minutes, we talked about, okay, well, like, wow, what a low event game this was. There wasn't really high dangers in either direction, certainly at 5-on-5. And then at the end of the night, you look at it and you're like, you know what? There was actually, like, it comes out to just kind of a regular game, probably about 9-7 each way, right? That's fine. It feels low event, but that's about what the Canucks kind of play at. But the first 20 minutes was solid. It was a quote-unquote road period. Yeah. And we chatted in the first intermission, okay, what's going to happen here moving forward? Canadians having to play all these games in different cities. Are they going to be tired? Well, who felt like they had the most energy in the final 40 minutes?
It was Montreal. I was kind of surprised. You know, hey, young team.
Sure.
Maybe, you know, don't be overly surprised. But third game of 4 nights, 6-game road trip, first game back. So it's essentially like a 7-game road trip.
If it's a character win for them, right, down 2 goals in that environment, is it a character loss for Vancouver?
Yeah, and I think, you know, we'll hear from the head coach when we get the audio, and I can't imagine he's overly pleased with, you know, how they, you know, handle themselves when they have the lead. And there were enough good things, which I'm sure he'll talk about some good things in this game, because there were, and that's the frustrating part of how this all unfolded here tonight. What else are you seeing on the Dunbar Lumber text inbox, Bick? 650-650.
Into the inbox here. So just load this up here. Canucks are a dumpster fire from Fernando. No fight, no defense, no one scoring. Feel sorry for the goalies and for Quinn Hughes. It's sad and hard to watch. This one from J-Dog, the car hog. That wasn't Lank the Tank tonight. That was Lank the Stank. Worst game I've seen Lankinen play in a Canucks uniform. Probably could have stopped every single goal tonight. Just brutal tending. This one... The lack of closing out games and losing games late in the third is a real testament to how bad Patrick Alvin has been at acquiring D-men to patch up the holes. That's Augusto in Burnaby.
Yeah, and Jamie Langley says, just how hard Hoagie is trying. Just see how hard Hoagie is trying to get better. Just incredibly bad luck. Jamie and Langley texting it. And, I mean, there is some bad luck to it, right? Like, you know, he is working very hard, and you just hope that he doesn't lose any confidence because he had a solid game overall, and they're going to need that depth of scoring down the lineup and him needing to play a lot better, too. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. But let's go to the phone boards, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. Let's go to New West, where we have Sean on the lead. Sean, thanks for calling in, buddy. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Thanks for taking my call. You know what? The game, I'm not going to say much about it. It's a multi-goal loss, multi-goal blown lead again. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, we're kind of used to this. I will say this, that Lane Hutson, that kid is really good. That kid's going to be something in the league. That guy is just unreal. He has like 30 points for defenseman as a rookie. Mm-hmm. Like that kid's going to be a star. Montreal's got a lot of good prospects and players coming up. So that team, it's good to see the Canadiens. Up and coming and getting into a playoff, but hopefully this year. But with the Canucks, with Petey coming back hopefully soon, you know, hopefully he can become that player he was a year ago. And basically with Petey, I think this all stems back from the end of the season press conference where he said he had tendonitis and Tocchet did back him up. He kind of just didn't say anything. I think Petey, my guess is, I'm just guessing, that he's probably mad at Tocchet for, like, not backing him up, management not backing him up, and you know, they traded his best buddy on the team, Cousy. Both guys haven't been the same since then. So I think there's a lot more into it that people don't talk about. I think that Petey playing stuff, just a lot of that stuff could be just he's upset in management. I just want to hear what you have to say about that. Thanks.
Thanks for the phone call. I mean, Kuzmenko was struggling before he was traded in Vancouver, and he was moved off the Pedersen line in Vancouver too that year, and Pedersen was red hot up until the struggles happened. Do you think moving Kuzi off the team had that impact? I don't know.
Color me skeptical.
I mean, Kuzmenko, don't forget, last year when he first went to Calgary, was lit it up too. His first, like, he scored, was it, you know, a bunch of goals, got to 20 on the season or whatever
it was. He was so disappointed he signed a contract shortly thereafter.
No,
because Kuzmenko was traded.
Oh, right.
Pedersen signed a contract.
Fair point. All right, let's continue on the phone boards, and let's go to Vancouver, where we have Adam on the line. Adam, thanks for calling in. Now, what are your thoughts here tonight?
Love your show. A longtime fan of the Canucks, and I just wrote a little poem, and then maybe you guys can comment a little bit after.
Okay.
Ifs and buts, Canadians and Canucks. Lining with Petey could have been days of joys for those two boys. The Finn who brings wins and our Swede, the one we need. The Habs got a savior, and the Canucks are struggling with locker room behavior. A 1-2 punch of Patty L with LEP, we could be the spoilers to the Oilers. Canucks make middle hack decisions instead of higher stack revisions. 1915, since Stanley was hoisted in our city, I think this is a real pity. We need another heart, just like the steamer. Maybe I'm a dreamer. The plan should be for Stanley, not just for Smeal, instead of selling tickets with no real cup dream. Go Canucks, go.
Wow. Hey, listen, Andrew.
Finger snaps.
Adam,
finger
thanks
snaps.
For your phone call. Adam, thanks for your phone call, man. That's the first time calling in?
I think I sent another poem in about a year ago.
Right.
There
All right.
you go.
That's what I thought you sounded familiar.
You read it out. So, you know, second time lucky.
Yeah, there you know you what? Go. I like it. Next time you have a poem, call back in and good on Fast Eddie to be on the draw to have the poem music on the
YouTube. I remember the poems, yeah. Nice
That's
work.
That's some good stuff. That's some good stuff.
I didn't catch all the rhymes because it was so well done.
I was so mind blown.
I was legit mind blown. Again,
I have to go back and listen to the podcast again to truly appreciate it.
It's a credit to our listeners. They're always putting in the extra work there. competing on the phone lines.
I love it. I like it, Adam. You know, a bit of a change of pace. That's good. I like it. This one here says, quit playing the other team's winning goals. It's getting depressing. Well, win more games. It's not our fault.
Sorry we're playing the highlights of the game.
Win the game.
We're playing the most important moments of the game.
You win the game, you get the winning goal call. You lose the game, you don't get the winning goal call.
Okay, on the next break, let's play the Lekker Mackey goal and let's just pretend like the game ended there.
No. Maybe the DeBrusque one because they tied it.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
All right.
If you want winning goals, listen to last year's podcasts.
Please. Yeah.
Please bring it in. Really good stuff. Jeffro says, natural Walt Whitman here. Good. Walt Whitman reference catches. That's
there
good.
You go.
I like that. I like that. I was not expecting. And this one here just says, what a poem. Bravo, bravo, man. So Adam getting lots of love on the text inbox. 650-650. Good stuff. Let's take one more phone call here.
Sure.
Let's go to Los Angeles, where we have Eric on the line. Eric, thanks for calling in. No pressure. You don't have to read a poem or do a rap or anything, but what's your take after a 5-4 overtime loss for the Canucks in Montreal?
Well, my take is real simple. You know, Rick Tocchet is a former Los Angeles King, and if you already know what his playing player days were like, he's going to coach the same way. And, you know, Montreal is going to be either Dr. Jekyll or Mr. Hyde. And the thing about it was, is that I've been reading a lot of the stuff coming out of the Vancouver Sun and the Vancouver Province. And I can pretty much tell you this was a character game.
From the Canucks, with how they performed?
From the Canucks standpoint.
So what was it you liked about it?
Well, you know, the thing about it was, all you had to do is just shoot the puck. Don't worry about anything else. Just shoot the puck. That's the thing that you have to realize. You know, the Habs are not always going to lay down and die. They're going to come after you. And you just got to be ready to do whatever it is that they have right at you.
Hey, great.
And that's how you play Canuck hockey. That's how you play Canuck hockey.
I like the take, Eric. Thanks for the phone call, man. Call back anytime, man. Yeah, Rick Tocchet played two seasons with the LA Kings in 94-95 and 95-96 and was essentially a point-per-game player and beat the crap out of anybody who got near him and or his teammates.
Left an impression, though. An impression on Eric. Look, I guess this is kind of the conversation we were getting into last post-game show at the end with Ian McIntyre, that it does feel like, again, teams usually take on the personality of the coach and play a certain way. And, you know, the point I was kind of making is it feels like there's no diversity in skill set at times, that it's a lot of similar players. And when we see, you know, lines get juggled up here, you're searching for a higher execution rate rather than a different dynamic on a line. And tonight, like, Lekkomäki goes into the lineup on this emergency call-up, and, like, it looks a little bit different. And you can just see, like, oh, wow, there's another player who plays the game differently and thinks the game differently. And obviously, you have to play well off the wall, and you have to do all these things. But, like, that's an impression from Lekkomäki, just, hey, I can have a 2-on-1, and I'm going to bury this chance. Like, it looks a little different when you have a different player there.
It does. It really does. And the finish, obviously, when you have somebody that can finish the way he can, I mean, it gives you a little bit of extra. We've had some inspired poetry on the text inbox. I mean, Colin Caribou says poetry and sports don't mix, so some people don't love it. Josh in Vancouver, Joel in Vancouver as well. But a lot of fans, a lot of love for the poetry. And Peter
again, Adam, people are going to love you and hate you for the same reason when you're an artist like that, all right?
That's why you just got to lean into it, be you. Peter in Vancouver, here's another poem. This is it. The Canucks are... No, I can't finish it.
That was smooth vibes, though. You picked up the toe. The BPMs were a bit higher.
If Fast Eddie, there's a reason that we call him Fast Eddie Gregory, it's his work on, as a producer, getting the clips as quick as possible. Great stuff as always. Character game, the blue, another one. Come on. That's what one unsigned text message has to say. So, you know, a lot of mixed reviews, as you usually get here on the text inbox, Bick.
I don't... Should I read one of the mixed reviews?
Sure, go ahead.
Not about the poem. I don't even know what to do with this one. Pat from Burnaby. So, Miller had a great game, according to you both. Question, what position does he play? What was his face-off record tonight? The problem in Vancouver is so obvious to any non-Homer hockey fan. Talk it. His mistakes are minute, but the effects they have are massive. Keeping you Vancouver fans in 650 radio. So, again, JT Miller had 4 points tonight. Admittedly, Pat from Burnaby, facts only, like, you are absolutely correct. Something we talked about in the second intermission, he had a 31% faceoff percentage after two periods. It ended up at 25. So, again, was not a very good night in the faceoff circle from JT Miller. He had 4 points.
Yeah.
4 points. He's in on all four goals. That's a pretty awesome game.
I think it's pretty good, too. Okay, let's take one more phone call. Let's go to Vancouver, where we have Sanjay on the line. Sanjay, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Hello.
Hey, Sanjay. I think we just lost Sanjay. He was a little preoccupied.
I think he was talking to someone else too.
Was he? Yeah, he may have been. He may have been. But yeah, that's what you got to be. Pay attention. We might just come to you. You got to be ready.
That was the Nils Höglander penalty of calls right now.
Poor Hoagie. Come on. Even Höglander is getting. Yeah, I mean, you know, Jen from The Drive says, I think Miller could have at least faked looking happy to score Mr. Pouty Face even when he scores. Glad he's back on the board, though. That's Jen on The Drive. So some jokes about JT, but four-point performance from him, unfortunately, in a 5-4.
Two even strength goals.
Yeah, no, it massive. Was big, big. All right, we have a lot more to get to on the other side. We have to take a break, and we will hear the thoughts of the head coach. Some criticism for Rick Tocchet. There is some love for Rick Tocchet. What does Rick Tocchet himself have to say about their loss in Montreal? That's coming up next on the Canuck Central Postgame Show, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. More coming up next on Home Your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz. We'll dive deep into all that's happening with the Vancouver Canucks. Listen 12 to 2 p.m. on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show. Join the discussion on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Matheson on the end board, scooped it around the near wall. But Quinn Hughes holds into the line. Hughes passes left wing for JT Miller. Top of the circle, played it through to DeBrusk. He scores! Jake DeBrusk was wide open on the right wing. He scores his team-leading 17th of the season. And the Canucks tie it at 4 on the man advantage.
And what a find there on the goal of Jake DeBrusk, as the Canucks do a good job of winning the draw and battling for the draw. It was actually Montreal that ended up winning the faceoff, but Vancouver sets up possession, and an excellent job by Quinn Hughes to get to JT Miller, and JT Miller freezes the PK of the Montreal Canadiens. They think he's going to shoot, but Jake DeBrusk on the far side, all by himself, gets a little separation on Armia and deposits it into the back of the net, making it 4-4. But JT Miller, excellent job to fake the shot, make the pass, and get results for Vancouver.
Canucks lose 5-4 in overtime in Montreal, but a big night from JT Miller. 2 goals, 2 assists, including that sublime feed on the power play to Jake DeBrusk that tied the game up and sent it to overtime. But unfortunately, the Canucks come up on the losing end. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah and Bick Nazar. Keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. A lot of love for Lane Hudson. Somebody texted in and said, how good was Lane Hudson tonight? Looks like a faster, younger Quinn Hughes. So even some bigger hype than that. So
he was slick on a bunch of plays, like just subtle touches. And even the play that we've talked about, the Gallagher play, like Matheson takes the puck behind the net and there's no pressure on him. So Lane Hudson just activates into the middle of the ice and not like in the defensive zone. He goes right to the center ice.
Yeah.
And the puck comes up and he takes his puck on the backhand and off his skate and calmly goes about his day. And he's slick, man. He's fun.
He really is. This one from HC in Langley. Oh, I think I just lost it. No, I have it here. HC and Ladner. I get the Canucks are most likely their own worst enemy, but once in a while, Tocchet needs to get vocal with the officials. Give them an earful here and there. They may have been burned a few times by reffing this season. Stand up for your team. I'm sure you guys think it was a weak take, but there is time and place for getting on a ref, HC and Ladner. Honestly, and you know, I don't think that is a weak take. I don't disagree. I think that Tocchet can be political or diplomatic to a fault with the officials. And I think the guys who get on the officials, sometimes they get more favorable calls because the officials don't want to be yelled at, right? Whereas the guy who's usually nice and doesn't say anything, they're like,
do you win him with honey, basically, is the approach.
Honestly, I think in the world of pro sports, when it comes to the officials, like the honey doesn't always work. You have to have a little bit of the other thing too. So I don't see, I know HC thought we would kind of crap on that take. I don't think it's a bad, I don't think you should be complaining all the time, but I do think there is an element of
every once in a while,
like don't let him get off that easy. You know,
I think there's part of it. Like, you know, Rick Tocchet has such a respect for the game.
Yeah. No, fair.
That he's got such a respect for other coaches, the job players do. And obviously the role the officials have in it.
But you're, yeah.
But, yeah, I don't – I mean, how many times in 2.5 years are you – yeah.
Well, he's I've seen him get frustrated with officials and argue with them before, yes. But he's never gone off post-game. Yeah, you know, the closest he came was like not a good call, but they make mistakes. Like,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
That's really
closest,
about it.
That's the closest he's come to criticizing, mm-hmm. especially off air. But just the point, I know people make that point as well every once in a while, so worth bringing it up and shining some light to that take. Thank you for texting in, HC, and others. We'll get to your texts in a few moments. But we mentioned the thoughts of the Canucks head coach after a 5-4 loss in Montreal against the Habs. Let's go to the podium where Rick Tocchet is available, brought to you by Tiletown.
Disappointing to get 3-1
and not get both. Well, it's disappointing. The 3-1, we kind of gave them the goal. We were just cut a little bit soft on a couple of plays, and they get a screenshot. You know, we double screen in front. I think if we can get out of the period 3-1, maybe settle some guys down. But I thought that we gave them that goal, and then that gives them a little bit of life.
Why do you think the team is so different with the third period this year?
Well, I think there's confidence. I think there's moments when you need a guy to make a play. Seems like when a team puts pressure on us, sometimes we just start slapping pucks around when you should want the puck. You know, your buddy has the puck, you got to hang in there for him and want the puck. Sometimes there'll be some contacts where you're going to have to go to an area and have contact to get it out. I think sometimes we're a little shy going to that area sometimes, but you know, we're working on it. You know, we'll continue to work out. We got a point. Disappointed to give it up, but we got to move on.
You get the big game from JT.
Yeah.
Since Christmas, do you feel like just generally his two-way game has been sort of trending in the right direction?
Yeah, he's trying to do the right things. I mean, you know, he's had a tough start with training camp. You know, a couple things were bothering him. And obviously, when he was out for about a month, he's starting to front his game. That was, he played a hollow game for us tonight.
That Montreal team, in terms of their rush attack, and pretty deliberate, like they'll do some of those roller hockey breakouts too.
Yeah.
How difficult are they to defend?
No, it's good. There's some speed. I just, you know, we just have some individuals. You got to stop skating backwards. You know, you got to gap up, and you got to be confident in your gap ups. You know, when you back up against teams like that, they're a quick team. They're going to get speed at the blue, so you got to have confidence in the system and yourself to gap up. So I just felt a couple of guys. It just takes a guy or two on a line to back up, and it's like a chain effect. But we got to keep working on that.
Encouraging to see the Paramacis.
Yeah, it was a nice goal. You know, I thought he held his own tonight. He's been playing well down there. Hell of a shot. That's his gift. So hopefully he builds off that.
Do you think there needed to be a response to the early get on?
Well, I think, you know, you just, the next people, like, it's not even about, you know, the fighting. You just got to do something hard. Whatever the next shift is, do it hard. That's what you should do. But we grabbed the 3-1 lead, so, you know, maybe, I don't know. Yeah.
You know, all these points are worth the same. They don't all feel the same.
Yeah.
Does it feel like you're spending more than a point when you don't get two tonight after the 11-2?
Yeah, it's just... Yeah, of course. You know, I just think that, you know, I can't say learning lesson, but we just need more guys to, when the pressure hits, to participate and meet pressure with pressure. You know, you can't have three guys on a line. You have to have everybody. And somebody's going to make a mistake, but the next guy can't be all in. You know, he's got to protect the back door. You know, give the least amount of shot to the goalie. Give the goalie the dot shot. But don't be all in on the second mistake where you give a backdoor or some kind of play. I think that's what we've struggled this year with, that we really cleaned up last year. That's the difference, I think.
That's Rick Tocchet at the podium, brought to you by Tiletown. From vision to reality, Tiletown has everything you need for your tiling project. See them today in Victoria, Richmond, Langley, and online at mytiletown.ca. So the head coach, some interesting thoughts there. Obviously, we've heard him speak about needing to meet pressure with pressure. We talked about this earlier, and that's exactly what he said. And, you know, and has talked about guys backing up too much and not making confident plays. And, you know, he really spoke about how one guy makes a mistake, you can't have other guys making mistakes, and mentions when pressure hits, you need to participate. You can't only have three guys out there. And that's his way of saying you have to play a bit physical. You have to get in there, and you can't be afraid of taking something on head on. But the interesting one to me, outside of obviously giving Lekromäki and JT some love, the thought on whether they should have stood up for Lekromäki after Caden Gooley threw a massive hit. Now, Caden Gooley threw a huge hit on Lekromäki.
Clean
hit.
Yeah.
And not too long after Montreal scored as well. It was like just down.
It was the first sequences of
right afterwards, right? And
can we just play this black here?
Do you think there needed to be a response to the early hit on?
Well, I think, you know, you just, the next people, like, it's not even about, you know, the fighting. You just got to do something hard. Whatever the next shift is, do it hard. That's what you should do. But we grabbed the 3-1 lead, so, you know, maybe, I don't know. Yeah.
That's how I sound when Sat's like, hey, you're going to come to work early today? I'm like,
like anytime you're racing, like that, and he's like,
I will say he has had that cough going on for about a season and a half here.
The cough, and you know, it's kind of funny, but to me, it's like
play the whole sequence where he kind of stumbles there too.
Do you think there needed to be a response to the early hit on?
Well, I think, you know, you just, the next people, like, it's not even about, you know, the fighting, you just got
to
do something.
Yeah. So, I mean, to me, that's a coach that's his way of saying yes, right? Yeah. Like, and he was very careful. If it was fine, he would have been, no, that was fine.
And you look, know, we had that earlier call from Eric in LA.
Yeah.
Just talking about, hey, like,
the player talk it was?
Yes. Like, I suspect, like, that's something Rick Tocchet would have done. And, you know, he's looking at a bunch of guys saying, like, hey, are you guys going to handle this stuff? And we talk so much about, hey, not doing timeouts and all these things. How much does he expect these guys to handle this sort of stuff on the ice? And we talked earlier about, hey, is this a character win for Montreal? Does it mean it's a character loss for Vancouver? And look, we can have honest conversations about, like, oh, is that really important? All these things. Does the head coach want you to do that? And I think that's like, that might speak to all the sort of issues. And I don't want to take too much out of a clearing of the throat and a stumble there, but like, that is kind of telling.
No, to me it is. I think that's his way of saying he wanted some sort of response. And imagine, hey, they took the 3-1 lead. That was fine. But the next shift, something has to happen. But it wasn't too long after that the Canucks did score. But there wasn't a physical response, so to speak, right? And I think part of it is it's a young player, but it's also a skill young player. And the team probably, he wants to see them come together a bit more. I just thought that was really interesting. And somebody texted in, great radio, guys. Played an interview back 30 seconds after we just heard it. We just wanted to isolate it. So if in case you missed it, you didn't think
well, thanks for that text.
All right. Keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. I mean, when he talks about you have to gap up, don't skate backwards. Do you think some of that is at the defense as well? Like, well, we don't have time to run through all 8 goals tonight because shorter show, the game goes to overtime.
Sure.
Right? But if you look at some of the goals that were scored against Vancouver, like the first goal, maybe in that one, Desharnais on Caulfield.
Well, there's a lot, like, of commentary.
Be a bit more confident and step up on a guy. Like, we spoke in the intermission that on that goal, the game's opening goal, that Vinny Desharnais is in the slot, but probably should be a bit more, I'd say, assertive in going and closing down Cole Caulfield, but he doesn't.
Yeah, and we got a lot of commentary about the defense tonight. 650-650, this unsigned one, says, I like how Tocchet heralds Forbert, Myers, Juleson as system guys, yet they can't even turn around 90 degrees without attacking forwards, passing them 100% of the time. This one from Bill in Port Moody. Actually, you know what? Yes. Having these trees on defense is an absolute liability at this point. The moment it gets past their sticks and into their skates, it's game over, and the other team is free range to get it deep and set up their offense. That's Bill in Port Moody. Yeah, like, it's the plan of what the offseason build of this blue line is. Obviously, look, hindered without Hughes and Roenick, but just in general, you wouldn't say this has been a successful plan.
No.
So they're going to have to make some agile moves here to try to just get a, as we talked earlier about, you know, diversity and skill set, what some of the forwards can look like. There's not really a diversity and skill set on the blue line, and they're going to need to address this soon.
I thought Desharnais, I mean, on that play, and I'm not trying to single him out necessarily because he's played a couple of good games, but not as good tonight. And hey,
he
maybe
made the one nice play on the Lekromäki goal.
He does. He makes a nice play.
But that's, like, again, kind of at fault for the opening goal,
the Caulfield goal,
and there's also another moment later too. The Suzuki one-timer.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that absolutely could have been a goal if Lankanen doesn't make that save.
Yeah, he wasn't. Like, I don't think it was his cleanest game. And what we talked about before was he had a couple of good games in a row and was commendable, mm-hmm. and you liked what he had done. But the issue with a lot of these guys that are number 6-7s, not even like pure sixes or 6-5s, the 6-7s is the reason they get out of the lineup is they can't consistently play at a decent level, right? And he might give you a couple performances where they're 7 or 8 out of 10, but then you see the floor fall off as well, right? And we saw a stretch where Brännström played well, that fell off. We saw a stretch where Juulsen was playing well, that fell off. Now Desharnais, we saw Friedman play for a while, then it fell off. And it's the inconsistency with guys of that ilk, right? And, you know, they're trying to get somebody to emerge from that group and become an everyday, you know, dependable player. And that just hasn't happened so far for these guys on the blue line. So a couple tough moments. And that's kind of what I think the coach was getting at least specifically on that one goal and some of the things that were going on as well. A lot of reaction on text inbox, 650, 650. This one here from Bill in Red Deer says, yes, thank you.
No, hang on. You got to read it properly. It's yes. Thank you for bringing that up. That's the culture issue, I think, is part of the problem. No team unity. Some fights are worth the penalty. I recall Demko's first game back. He gets tripped on the net on purpose. Your Vezina potential goalie that's been out for almost a year with an injury and nothing really. That's Bill from Red Deer.
Yeah, and you know what? You know, following up on that idea, Saeed from North Van says Canucks missing Cole and Zadorov. Zadorov's toughness, especially like when stuff like that happened. You know, Zadorov was at least gonna say something to the guy at some point in the game, right? Like he would make his presence felt. And I think that is certainly something that this team can need a bit more, can use a bit more of. We'll try to get to some more of your texts as the show goes on. Let's take one more phone call. Let's go to North Van again. And we have Sia on the line. Sia, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Hey guys, how's it going? First time caller. Sat, we're actually in the same fantasy league. I'm sorry to
there
see
we
that.
Go.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I'm struggling, man. I'm having a tough time, man. I'm having a tough time in that league.
No, I'm sure you're busy, so that's fine. anyways, I was actually going to touch on the subject that you just brought up, and it's our defense. I think, I know we've blown all these leads and everything, but I think at the end of the day, it's just the management gambled on these defensive players who are not turning into like threes, fours, or fives. Mm-hmm. And I think the biggest issue with this team is Hronek. I think his injury is kind of being overlooked. Mm-hmm. And I think once we get him back, I think it's just going to make a huge difference. So thanks again, guys.
Hey, Sia, great phone call. Appreciate it, man. Call
good,
back anytime.
Good rookie lap, especially when you can take a shot at Sat.
No, I love it. I mean, there's a reason he's lapping me. And with that take, I think you can tell why. But, you know, I think he makes an excellent point on Phil Hronek. And I do think for all the criticism Hronek took earlier this year for not scoring a lot and mm-hmm. the production wasn't there. And he did pick it up before he got injured too, right? But nonetheless, he was really good defensively. He had a couple moments or giveaways, and he got walked a couple times. People like to point those things out. But overwhelmingly, he made a positive impact. There was no defenseman on this team, or even up until now, that has a better goals against per rate per 60, and even expected goals against per 60. He's been legitimately good defensively. And the level that him and Hughes can be at, I do believe that this team would probably have an easier time holding on to leads if you had another player like Hronek around as well, especially with how he's able to win along the boards too. And he had done a far better job physically this year because of the training he put into this offseason. So I think it's a great point by Sia about we talk so much about missing Hughes or missing Pettersson and missing these guys. Not enough is being made about missing Filip Hronek.
Yeah, again, if you're not even the biggest fan of Filip Hronek, like you, at the very least you admit like that guy's a number four, like worst case scenario, that guy's a number four. He gets put into a spot where he gets to help unlock Quinn Hughes, and those two guys together, like they're one of the best pairings in the league, if not the best. So yeah, it's a huge blow not having him.
And to the other point he made about the organization kind of missing on the way they handle their blue line, certainly Desharnais and not making any more significant additions to that. And Brännström hasn't really, I mean, depth, but, you know, hasn't really emerged in that sense. I really do like Derek Forbort. And the other storyline tonight would have been Derek Forbort if he did not return from injury. He did return after getting knocked down in the second period. So glad to see him coming back. I've liked a lot of what I've seen from Derek Forbort. But it's also one of those things where, to your point, there isn't a versatility of skill set, right? So you have Derek Forbort, who's essentially doing the things that Soucy was doing last year. So he's kind of replaced Soucy, and Soucy's regressed. So Soucy's kind of playing like, you know, a third pair defenseman right now. And I'm not saying Forbert's a legit top four, but like I think he's brought a lot of good things, especially defensively. But there isn't enough variety on how these defensemen work on the back end.
And essentially, Juulsen at his best can play like a Derek Forbert game. Desharnais at his best can play like a Derek Forbert game. And suddenly, you got a lot of guys who are playing the same way and kind of tasked to do the same job. And therein lies the huge responsibility on Quinn Hughes and Filip Hronek. And so when they're out, you see what you've seen in the last little bit here.
Yeah, for sure. Josh in Mission says, worst case, Hronek is a number three, but I think he's a legit number two with the way his defensive game was going earlier this year.
I was just being extra harsh for the sake of conversation, because we get a wide spectrum of people who say, this guy's no good. I'm just saying, at worst.
Yeah.
I don't believe that, but at worst, like that guy's like a number four. So a credible top four. You can see the value it has to your roster. 650. This one. If I have to watch Canucks D-man not named Quinn Hughes ring the puck around the boards 25 times a game, I'm going to gouge my eyes out. Forget trading Miller or Pettersson. Alvin needs to acquire a top four, legit top four D-man, so I can keep my eyesight.
Yeah, don't gouge your own eyes out. We don't want to see that happen. Tarek in Kingston says, and if I'm mispronouncing your name, please let us know. I want to get your name right. They don't need to respond to a hit on Lekromäki by taking an instigator. Instead, go after their best players, which we did. Miller took a hard run at Hudson. That was a good response. Go after them with clean, hard hits, which the Canucks did. That's Tarek in Kingston texting in.
Yeah, I think I just lost a text, but I think it's Alex also tried to make the point, too, that JT had a big hit as well right after that Lekromäki play as well. Again, it was just the manner in which Rick Tocchet.
It was interesting. It was interesting.
And then again, cited. It's like, well, we had a 3-1 lead, so I guess whatever. But, well, you know.
Yeah. You know what, Bick? Okay, so we have some time. Let's run through the Canucks goals, right? Because I think there's a lot of great things to talk about the Canucks goals. We mentioned one, and we'll see if we can get to some more of the goals against. But JT Miller had a night tonight, and he's the guy that gets the scoring going for the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, just a hammer shot here by JT, and it's high in and out of the defensive zone. He dumps it in, and here, again, like this is the stuff we wanted to talk about with Nils Höglander tonight, because he's first to it, pressures the puck, wins the puck behind the net, sweeps up the wall, and it appears Quinn Hughes may have taken a touch on this, and Höglander comes off the wall and like darts right to the middle of the ice, almost surprises Slafkovský, and he stumbles, and while he's falling over, Höglander slides this pass beneath his stick and right to JT, who one times it and beats Montembeau.
Yeah, it's great play by Höglander. You're right. And Hoagie now has a couple points in his last four games. Like he's picking a couple assists. He's been a lot more dangerous. And, you know, that's why that penalty really sucks. And again, I hope it doesn't take too much of his confidence away and also doesn't lose too much trust with the head coach, because it seemed like his game was trending in the right direction. And yeah, so that's JT. Big part in the first goal. And JT also scores a second goal, giving the Canucks a 2-1 lead in the second period. And he just picks up the change after Jonathan Lekromäki makes a nice play. And kind of, you know, the thing that allows Miller to even get that puck is Lekromäki kind of just fanning on that shot, trying to go five hole on Montembeau.
Yeah, not the greatest attempt by Lekromäki. Again, it all happens so fast because Myers goes to dump it in. It kind of bounces off weird off the boards and goes right around Carrier and perfectly to Lekromäki. And as he goes to shoot and go five hole, it just comes off a stick weird, bounces right back out front for JT Miller, who just shovels it, backhands it upstairs.
Yeah, it was a nice finish by JT Miller, and that's how the Canucks got to the 2-1 lead, and the Canucks kept it going. This is when, you know, they really took the game over, and Jonathan Lekromäki got the assist, and just over a minute and 20 seconds later, he gets a goal after being sprung by Brock Besser.
Yeah, Desharnais on the retrieval, I thought did a really nice job to hold off the forecheck. He reverses it to JT, who doesn't, just rim it around, looks for the diagonal, out the zone, hits Brock Besser, settles it, hits Lekromäki joining the play, and they link up. And I just love the way he takes this. He's got speed coming through the neutral zone and then widens it out to allow Myers to catch up to the play. Now suddenly D-man's got to make a decision
and
here.
And he looks over to Myers, right before he shoots.
And it draws a defender towards Myers, who does, like, again, that's the job. You take the pass away, and then it just up to him. And just the way he's drifting to the left and he pulls the stick in close and just rips the shot short side, just above the pad, below the blocker, beats Montembeau there.
You see the elite shot, right? Yeah. The release, you know, changing the angle slightly before getting that shot off, and just how quickly he makes a decision after looking off Tyler Myers, and a real goal scorer's goal from Jonathan Lekromäki. Very exciting, getting a second in the National Hockey League. And the Canucks end up tying it on the power play to send the game to overtime. Jake DeBrusk finishing off a JT Miller pass. And this is classic JT Miller, Bick, right? Coming downhill and deception. He's showing shoot and then snipes over a pass to DeBrusk.
Yeah, it changes the stick lanes for a bunch of players, and they all commit to JT. Armia changes his stick out of the lane on the pass to DeBrusk, and he's getting ready for a net front battle because he's expecting a rebound. And DeBrusk just kind of peels away up high, and JT, with like all this flex on his stick already with the shot, just redirects and sends it over to DeBrusk, who hits the empty net.
Yeah, great finish from Jake DeBrusk, but an even better play by JT Miller. Unfortunately, Canucks lose in overtime. All right, we are going to hear from JT Miller on the other side. More of your reaction, more analysis, plus Ian McIntyre as the Canucks Central postgame show continues, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
It's Canucks Central with Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah, your destination for everything Canucks. Exclusive interviews, inside info, and even the postgame show. Listen 4 to 6 p.m. weekdays and on demand through your favorite podcast app.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central postgame show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Desharnais is back to it behind his own net. Hit into the end boards by Josh Anderson. Miller back to help out below his own goal line. Plays ahead to Besser. Now to Lekromäki. A two-on-one. He's got Myers with him. Lekromäki, that quick scores! Jonathan Lekromäki gets the primary assist on the Miller goal and then scores himself just seconds later. And the Canucks lead 3-1.
And just like that, the Vancouver Canucks are rolling.
It was a nice goal. You know, I thought he held his own tonight. He's been playing well down there. Hell of a shot. That's his gift. So hopefully he builds off that.
Jonathan Lekromäki getting his second goal of his National Hockey League career. Very young career, and a tremendous performance from him, unfortunately, in a 5-4 overtime loss in Montreal against the Habs, but he did impress the Canucks head coach, Rick Tocchet. Keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. We'll hit some more of your comments here as the show goes on. And we are going to get to IMAC coming up in a little bit as well, and we are going to get to JT Miller's thoughts coming up in just a moment. I did want to also spend a couple minutes talking about Quinn Hughes, Bick. I know it's kind of been lost in the discussion because the Canucks lost again, lost the lead, you know, the penalty late and just all the storylines. JT Miller's big game. But Quinn Hughes played his first game back, and you could see that he did have a bit of a contraption on his hand. I know it was referred to as such on the Prime broadcast. And
apparatus.
And when you see it, and you're kind of like, okay, it is an apparatus. Like, it's not just a cover on his hand. Like, it seemed to be more than
it's
that.
It's not just a tape job.
No, so you can tell that, you know, the left hand injury, is it hand, is it finger, whatever it is, it's still bothersome enough that he has something to deal with on it, right? But nonetheless, he ends up playing pretty significant minutes for a player who was out for just over a week, almost 2 weeks when you factor in the Christmas break, ends up logging 26 minutes. Now, maybe, you know, you get to overtime and this game ended up being a lot closer than it needed to be perhaps in the end. But I thought him having two assists and the way he played, it wasn't a classic Quinn Hughes performance, but you see the upgrade on the blue line when he's back in the lineup.
Oh, yeah. I mean, two assists. And the effort he does on the DeBrusk goal, we didn't have a chance to talk about it as well. But like, his hustle to get to the top of that point and on the far board on the keep is just massive. And he's the one that swings it around to JT and gives him the opportunity to get that play across to DeBrusk. But, yeah, it's just a refreshing sight to see him back in the lineup. And again, a lot of minutes, only five shot attempts, which I say only somewhat in jest, but you know, he can usually clock towards 7 to 10, but 5 shot attempts tonight. One of them ends up on net for Quinn Hughes tonight.
Yeah, it was a really strong performance from Quinn. I really liked what I saw from him, and just his overall ability to control the game was back to the Canucks blue line. And, you know, the other thing I wanted to note before we get to JT Miller here, Connor Garland and Suter, that combo, had done so well for a large part. They've kind of had some struggles recently, and tonight that line really struggled to gain any possession. It's not very often, Bick, that you see Connor Garland at the bottom of the shot differential chart on Canucks teams. Like, he's usually at the very top. Him and Connor Garland were on ice for they only controlled 17% of the shots. That means
it's tough.
That means 83% of the shots were directed at the Canucks net when Garland and Suter were out there. That chemistry they had, and this happens, right? You know, guys go through spells. Right now, it seems like it's kind of been gone, and it wasn't really reinvigorated tonight either. And, you know, I thought, you know, whether they had DeBrusk there for a while and whether they had Hoglander jump in there for a while, it just didn't seem like they could make it work as a duo nor a trio tonight.
Yeah, and someone like Pius Suter, who's had a fantastic season, don't get me wrong, right? Like, I will sing his praises a lot. Just to highlight here, though, in the last 12 games, he's got 2 points. It's 2 assists. And this is the element. Like, he's been overtasked. Yeah. And there was a stretch when he had to jump in when JT was out, and he did a fantastic job. But it just goes to show, like, how difficult it is to be consistent that high up in the lineup, that someone who had success earlier in the year now having to step in with Pettersson out, and it's a tough environment.
Yeah.
And he's just got the 2 points, and it's another sign that, like, they need to get healthy to put Pius Suter back in another position where he can succeed.
And again, like, this is one of the things where you get guys that can punch above their weight for a stretch, and they can do it for a while, but can you consistently play at a top two center level? And that was always a lot to ask, but he's been commendable. Like, I'm not trying to come down on Suter or be critical of him or even Garland, but just past couple of games, they haven't been as effective. And it's a lot to ask for him to play 18 minutes a game and play at a high level and have the role that he does have. And, you know, that's something that, you know, goes back to getting Pettersson back and slotting everybody back into space can help out a lot, especially for the way this forward group is constructed. All right, we'll get to some of your thoughts here on the text inbox coming up in a moment. But let's get the thoughts of JT Miller. Big performance from him tonight. 4 points, 2 goals, 2 assists. And here he is talking about them letting the lead get away from them again tonight.
I figure that's a frustrating result, especially being up 3-1.
Yeah, we had a good push there. We need to be able to hold on to leads like that. Have to be comfortable with a lead. Seems we're unfortunately a little less comfortable than before. And you know, they had a really good second period push, and you know, we didn't really have an answer. You know, I thought wasn't all bad, but still, 2-goal lead, we should be able to lock that down.
What'd you see from Jonathan Besser in your line?
It's nice to produce a little bit, but thought Lex looked good, brought some energy. Happy he got on the score sheet.
When you guys were waiting on the bench following the game winner, what was the discussion there?
Oh, I think we thought there was a little contact. I'm not 100% sure.
Just in terms of the flow of that game, you know, first minute goes poorly for your club, but you were able to take the lead. Seemed like your line's two-way game was probably at a level you'd be happy with despite the result. Do you think your two-way game generally has been tracking well across the last 4 or 5 games, maybe since Christmas?
As a team?
As a team, but also you personally.
Oh, yeah, I don't... Listen, I don't think the two-way has been, you know, a huge problem. It's not like I'm stuck in my own end all night. You know, personally, I just think that, you know, obviously the production's been a little tougher to come by as of late. So obviously when you spend more time in the other team's end, you don't have to play defense and you get more of a rhythm. So it's nice to see a couple go in. But as a team, I think it just needs to be a little more consistency. I mean, I think we have these spurts in games where the other team takes control of a little bit and we have a hard time of stopping that momentum and flipping it quickly. And I'm not worried about myself. I'm just worried about the team.
That's JT Miller after the game, not worried about himself, but what to do with the team. And, you know, didn't really go down the road of thinking his defensive game has been really bad this year, but, you know, spoke about spending more time in the offensive zone and generating a bit more. And the thing with JT, and I know the 2 years where he put up a lot of points, he got off to good starts as well, had 99 points, had over 100 points. But generally in his career, and even in those years he put up a lot of points, like, he finishes years strong. Like, he's very much a second half player. Is this the start of him getting hot again in the second half, having this type of 4-point performance like he did tonight? Like, these are the types of games we saw from him when he put up 100 points.
Right. I mean, it needs to take, like, a marked step here. I'll just highlight this. Okay, so going back to 2021-22, he had, again, just shy of basically a point a game from October to January. And then February, it was 16 points in 10 games, 21-14, 18-13 to end that season. 2022-23, again, yeah, just shy of a point a game. In December, he actually only had 6-13, and then he ends up putting 21-15 in March, 10-10 in February, 14-13 in January, and then 7-7 in February. In 2023-24, again, a very nice November, 23-15, 19-13 in February, 15-13 in February, 12-12. Yeah, it's like it's kind of just tracked this way in general for JT. And so, yeah, obviously so far this season hasn't been perfect, obviously, but he's just shy. Oh, I guess now he'd be a point a game. It's 29-29 now after a 4-point night, but that's where it's at for JT. It's traditionally, again, like, January and February is when it starts to take off for JT.
Yeah, and hopefully we see him really take off here for the Canucks, and they need Pedersen back too. Like we mentioned, in a game like this where you're trying to have some calm and have some good defensive presence, having top centers playing at a high level goes a long way, and having Pedersen and JT, and we know if you get both those guys playing well, both those guys producing, then we can probably start seeing what the ceiling of this team is. But tonight, seeing JT have that type of performance, I think it was big. Like, we've been waiting for a signature JT game. And I still think he can be even better than what he was tonight as far as making an impact. But he was physically engaged. He was good defensively. They generated scoring chances. They didn't give up a lot when they were on the ice as a line either. I can't really pick a lot of faults into what JT did tonight. Like, you want on the PK? I guess the one thing is,
okay,
face-offs tonight?
Well, face-offs is the thing. I wanted to bring this up because some people asked, why is JT on the PK in that spot? So on the Sherwood penalty, Bluger is on the ice. And I just suspect it's usually Suter and Bluger that go out first. Bluger being on the ice there for that shift switches him out, and JT is the one that takes that face-off, and they end up getting the goal off of it.
Yeah, so that's pretty much it outside of that. And yeah, again, situationally, because he hasn't been great in the faceoff circle tonight, did you maybe have somebody else out there? But nonetheless, I mean, if you're picking at anything with JT, it would be faceoffs. Other than that, he was tremendous tonight.
Yeah.
But let's go to a man who was there on the scene, at the scene, and saw how the Canucks played tonight, lost another lead, but also saw some positives from how Lekkerimäki and JT Miller played. Let's bring in the man we call the triple threat. You watch him on TV, you read him on digital, and you're about to hear him on radio. He is Ian McIntyre.
There must be some kind of way out of here.
Well, it was entertaining. I'll say that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it was. I mean, 9 goals, lead changes. The crowd in Montreal was alive. The Habs have been playing better. So it was fun.
I'm now wandering. Can you guys hear me?
Yes,
we can.
Hear you, yes.
I'm now wandering around my hotel room hoping for a better signal because half of what you just said sat faded out.
Okay.
You have to repeat yourself.
Okay, I just said
you can't repeat greatness. It was lost in the moment.
Basically, fun night in Montreal from our standpoint as well. But, obviously they lose another, lead tonight and end up losing it in overtime. Well, what to you was the big game story in their 5-4 loss?
Well, it's to me, the big story is not the story of this game. It's been the story of this season. And how the Canucks, who were so good last year at closing out games in the third period, what were they, Bick? Like 38, 1-4, something like that?
Actually, even better than that. I believe it's 42-1-4.
42-1-4. So they lost 5 times in 47 games when leading into the third period. Tonight was the sixth time in 19 games this season they've lost when going into the third. Now, granted, none of the six losses have been in regulation, so the Canucks are getting loser points, but they're still throwing these points away like it's a teddy bear toss. Like, you cannot be this fragile and this vulnerable with the lead and think that you're going to win enough games to make the playoffs. Like, they right now, winning looks impossible for this team because they need to do so many things well in order to win because they're making so many mistakes. I mean, think about tonight's game, and I'm sure you guys have already touched on this stuff. So JT Miller gets 4 points and plays possibly his best game of the season. Certainly his best game since he returned from his leave of absence.
Yeah.
Jonathan Lekker-Mäki comes up from the minors and in his sixth NHL game, snipes one goal and sets up another, you know, by getting behind the Montreal defense. You have Kevin Lankinen, who makes a pile of five-star saves. And was, you know, had to make a couple of those to get the Canucks to overtime after it was 4-4. The power play goes 1-for-3. The team responds to another slow start by taking over the game in the second period and had this really fast, really aggressive Canadiens team at a standstill for about the first 10 minutes of the second period and were leading 3-1. All of those good things, and they still lose the game. And I would say last year, they didn't need this many good things to win. Winning wasn't this hard for them last year. They just put teams to sleep. You know, they managed the puck. They managed the clock when they were ahead. And they won a lot of games. And a lot of them weren't, in fact, most of them, weren't nearly as exciting to spectate as tonight's game was here in Montreal. But it's not, you can't be successful this way. And I know that a lot of what I'm talking about, and particularly, you know, their discomfort with leads is all about confidence. You know, some bad things have happened to them, and now they're playing like other bad things are going to happen. But you have to find a way to play through that. And maybe the only way they do that is to win some close games, you know, to win 2-1, 3-1. Do you know that they haven't won a game they've won one game since November when they've scored fewer than 4 goals. Like,
yeah, it's rough.
They just cannot close out teams. They cannot hang on to leads. They cannot kind of get out of their own way. I mean, everybody says winning is hard, and I know it's hard, but right now they're making it next to impossible on themselves.
Is there a common, I asked the same question to Randy, but is there a common trend that you see through these games where they've lost these leads? That is it a structural thing? Is it a roster construction thing? Like, what stands out to you?
Well, I think two things physically that stand out is they seem to think that they can play the entire third period in their zone. You know, they're playing far too passively and on their heels when they have the lead. And part of that, the other physical thing, is that they, and Talkin, I think, referenced this in his post-game scrum, they can't seem to execute a pass. They can't make a play under pressure. What has Talkin talked about since he got here, meeting pressure with pressure? They don't put the pressure on the opposition to make plays. They just flip pucks out. But I think both of these things have as much to do with confidence as have to do with physical ability. They look like a team that's terrified with the lead. And when you're scared and you think you might make a mistake or the bad things are going to happen, you get skittish with the puck and you just throw it out. You bank it out. You give it back to the other team. But all that does is allow them to regroup and try and attack you again. So I think the two physical things are just far too passive and defensive when they have the lead. And they can't make plays with the puck to relieve that pressure that they're under. They can't move the game to the other team's end by executing a couple of passes and then getting their forecheck and put some pressure on the other team. Meet pressure with pressure. But I think both of those again have as much to do with confidence as has to do with their ability. Oh, another good thing tonight, I forgot to mention in my catalog, how about Quinn Hughes returning?
Yeah.
How about their best player and one of the best players in this league coming back? Obviously, his hand's heavily braced. I think it'd be foolish to think that he's anywhere near his best with the puck.
Mm-hmm.
But he comes back and he logs 26 minutes and contributes a couple of assists. And that wasn't enough to help them win either.
Well, and a player who's been compared to Quinn Hughes is Lane Hudson. And how did he look to you in person tonight?
Looks like a mini-me of Quinn Hughes. And I mean that figuratively and literally. He's even smaller than Hughes, but he's dynamic. I think the Canucks tried to make it hard on him. I mean, he ends up getting a really fluky goal against the guy who should be bouncing it off the guy who should be his NHL template, you know, when he bounced it off Hughes's skate. But, you know, he looked dynamic. He looked good. You know, all their little players, you know, all the Smurfs were out for Montreal in overtime on the power play. Yeah. They all look good, but mm-hmm. that's partly due to the space that the Canucks gave them. And, you know, Montreal is a fun team to watch. They look like they're a team on the rise. And I say that somewhat with reservation because they've supposed to have been a team on the rise for about 3 years now, but they play fast. They've got these small dynamic players who drive their offense and they got a lot of mojo right now. They're a team on a roll. They're as hot right now as the Canucks are cold. So, you know, it was a good game to watch, but it's an awfully disappointing result to me for the Canucks. And I don't want to be too doom and gloom because there are these positive things that I've just mentioned. And I think on Wednesday in Washington, they're going to get Elias Pettersson back as well. We'll see, but that's the way it's kind of trending right at this point. But you've got to make it easier on yourself to win. When you do the hard work to build these leads, you have to find a way to get both points. You can't keep spilling these points like they are as if they're, unlimited that you know, or whatever, we'll get those back later because as the season goes on, things get faster and tighter. We know how the pace is of an NHL season. It's not all even. It gets faster and harder towards the end. You're probably not going to be able to recover what you're spending right now. You just hope that you win enough games that what you've squandered isn't going to cost you a playoff spot.
I believe it was you that asked the question about the response on Lekker-Mäki and should the team have done enough. What did you make of Rick Tocchet's answer on that? Because we spent some time chatting about it. It felt like he expected more.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough situation, and I'm colored by, I still have a headache from Thomas Drantz ranting about it beside me in the press box, that there wasn't more response. And I'm kind of, you know, for a guy who's old school, I understand the way the NHL is now. And you can't, I mean, Montreal scored twice on the power play as it was. So you can't just abandon a game that early and go after somebody because he hit your rookie with a clean check and a check that Lekker-Mäki is going to have to learn to avoid, you know, as he gets older and gets more experience. I think it was difficult at the time because it was all one constant flow, right? Like the goal followed the hit. I think later in the period, I think Miller hit Gouley twice, including knocking him on his ass one time.
Mm-hmm.
I think he also ran, I think it was Miller who ran Lane Hudson, right, in the first period,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of, I guess, how you respond now in the NHL. If they're going to hit your small rookie, you go hit their small rookie. In the end, I didn't really have a problem with it. Certainly in the old days, you know, if somebody didn't fight somebody or do something, it was seen as kind of team weakness. But the Canucks aren't a soft team. You know, they're not. They out-hit most of their opponents. Do they have enough sort of physical deterrence. Well, they don't have any Zadorov this season to go, you know, fight somebody or hold somebody accountable. But I don't think, in the end, I don't think that's a big factor. You would hope that Lekker-Mäki feels like the team has his back, and he bounced right up from that hit, and he had a good game. So it doesn't seem like he was deterred or bullied or anything by that. I think it kind of, you know, to quote Todd Bertuzzi, it is what it is in today's NHL game. And the fact that Vancouver briefly took over that game in the second period, and last year that game would have been over at that point. Like 3-1, not just 3-1, but 3-1 with the Canadians suddenly stalled after skating all around the Canucks in the first period, and the Canucks playing in the Montreal end and looking confident and having the puck most of the time, that game would have been over. But the fact that they led it and then trailed and then had to rally, you know, it wasn't a game where you could do something stupid and go after a guy.
Ian, before we let you go, there's so many talking points on this game too, but we kind of touched on the main ones, and it was good to see JT have such a big performance. But you've been churning out some great pieces on Sportsnet.ca as you usually do. Great chat with Alvin not long ago, a tremendous talk with Quinn Hughes, and an even more revealing conversation with Elias Pettersson, which is up on Sportsnet.ca right now as well, and does need your read if you haven't read it yet. What was your big takeaway talking to Elias Pettersson over his struggles so far this season?
Well, it was, I guess what impressed me was his accountability. And it wasn't a long conversation, but it was a polite one. I don't know that Elias was enjoying it, the interview, as much as I was. But, you know, he took responsibility for his play. And he said that, you know, he wasn't upset by Alvin's comments because he knows that he needs to be better. He knows that the team has expectations for him that he has not met. So that accountability, without that accountability, you can't fix anything, right? Like until a player recognizes he hasn't been good enough and needs to be better, you're not going to get that improvement from him because he thinks that everything's fine. So the fact that Pettersson was willing to be, you know, accountable, at least in a conversation with me, and maybe it was easier for them that I was the only reporter there. I was the only Vancouver reporter there. So he didn't have to go in front of a whole bunch of cameras, and he didn't have to get peppered with a lot of follow-up questions. But I thought, I was impressed that he came out and held himself accountable. And that's one of the things of the things that Patrick Alvin said last week about Pettersson to me. The one that probably doesn't get enough attention is that you got to face the music when you're not playing well. And that's something that Elias, who can be very defensive at times and can be kind of combative in these media availabilities, has not been great at, in my opinion. But I thought it was a big step and the right thing for him to come out and talk to me and say that he hasn't been good enough. I will tell you as well, and I didn't use this in my story. We were just chatting. You know, I spoke briefly with Pat Brisson, his agent, also the agent for Quinn Hughes. It seemed a good time to talk to Pat. And we had a brief conversation, and it wasn't for me to quote him, but I just wondered, you know, I wanted to get his sense of the temperature. And he said, you know, I don't think I'm talking out of school here because, you know, there was nothing earth shattering. But Pat Brisson said he has a great relationship with Patrick Alvin. And sometimes, you know, managers have to do what they have to do to get a message out to players. And Pat Brisson is not upset at the Canucks. He was actually very proud of how his client, Elias Pettersson, handled himself when he was talking to me and the things he said and the accountability. And let's remember as well, Pat Brisson, I mean, he's you know, one of these super agents. He's got a ton of high-profile clients. But his first and greatest client was Sidney Crosby, who epitomizes that accountability in the same way that the Sedins did when they were with the Canucks. And there's other Canucks, great Canucks, who have been like that. Roberto Luongo was the same way. Marcus Naslund before him. These guys always held themselves to whatever we thought of them, they held themselves to a higher standard and were very honest in their assessment when they had not played well and made themselves accountable that way. Sidney Crosby's like that. So Kaprasov was pretty pleased with how Elias handled himself. Now, the bottom line is, and Elias said this himself, if he scores more goals and the team wins more games, all this goes away, right? This is what has spawned these conversations and, in my opinion, to some extent, the drama and the intrigue over his relationship with JT Miller is the fact that Canucks have not won enough games, and those two guys, Miller and Pettersson, have not played close to what they're capable of. And, you know, Miller, that was a hugely positive performance by him tonight. Hopefully when Elias comes back, he can conjure something similar.
Well, we have an entire second half of a season to digest still, and hopefully we see the best from those two players. But what is undeniable is that we do see the best from you consistently, Ian. Great stuff as always. I look forward to reading your latest on sportsnet.ca as well.
Well, it'll be filed in within an hour or so. But thank you for reading, Sat. It seems like you're my most loyal reader, and I appreciate the plugs. And you help Vic with, you know, the long words in my stories.
That's how we do it. It's a team effort here.
It's Google and Sat.
I'm sorry, Vic. That was totally gratuitous, and I will feel shame, but the feeling will pass.
It's fine. I'm sure I won't think about that, you know, 15 years from now and be like, oh, I remember that time iMac made fun of me on January 6th.
It'll be a therapy session in 2045 or something. Yeah.
And a shout out to my friend Colleen Miskew, who I'm sure is listening right now. Never misses our show, just like you never miss one
there
of my stories.
There we go.
I love it. Fantastic. And we appreciate Colleen very much. And we appreciate your contributions as always, Ian. And we look forward to chatting with you on Wednesday when the Canucks are in Washington to take on the Caps.
I'll look forward to that as well. It is never boring, right?
No, it never is. Not in this market. Thanks, Ian.
See you guys.
That is Ian McIntyre. Make sure to read his latest on sportsnet.ca. And thank you all for listening, participating, being part of the show. We love it as always. Always a pleasure. Appreciate every single one of you. And we'll be chatting with you guys on Wednesday. Back at it again tomorrow. I'm on Canucks Central, Satyar Shah, with Dan Riccio. Frank Cervalli is going to join us tomorrow. He's going to join us today. What do you have going on the People Show, Bic?
Tuesdays, Yannick Hansen will join us. Mark Schofield will join us, setting up a wild card weekend in the NFL. But we'll chat with Yannick as well.
Yeah, a lot to get to. Yannick, told a great story on Friday to us when you filled in for Reach about what Mike Gillis said to him when the Canucks were struggling. If you missed that, check it out on the Canucks Central podcast. Special thanks to Fast Eddie Gregory. Great stuff as always. Thank you again. This has been the
Canucks. He's hanging around though too.
Oh, right. You know what? I forgot. My bad. Fast Eddie Gregory has another hour to go because Josh Elliott Wolf is coming up next for the post show on Sportsnet.
Like the Canucks, and you'll put in some OT tonight.
Yeah, we did. All right. That's next. Sportsnet 650.